Welcome to Season 4, Episode 3 of the Digital Forensics Future podcast. This is the first installment of the Dom and Jerry show, where Dominique Calder and I talk about our power duo trip this summer to the country of Lesotho, Southern Africa.
This is only my second time going abroad for something like this. The first trip was Germany. I got to go to Bonn, Germany, the home of Sebastian Bach. In Bonn, I got to share some of my PhD research with the Digital Forensics Research Workshop, aka DFRWS. So got to meet some of the other contributors from around the world as we met up in Europe for this. I think it was the 10th anniversary of the conference. And it was so cool to just see how the different forensic contributions from all over, everything from breaking the TPM module and encryption with BitLocker to people trying to determine, do Apple watches, do they calculate vertical, like flights of stairs, for instance? Can we tell that somebody has gone up a flight of stairs, or someone who's trying to make the sensing of the GPS tracking for a device, for instance? Maybe if I left my phone in a warehouse, but where in the warehouse? How accurate can we get that approximation to the location that's been given from the device? So it was all types of cool projects, cool dissertations. I presented my dissertation research in the Women for Forensic Computing workshop. And that was really cool to see a bunch of other women who were doing some of the same type of contributions as myself.
Yeah, on that topic, I feel like while we have some really notable women leaders within digital forensics,
I've been working with international superstar Jessica Hyde.
Of course.
Hexordia. Yep. Hexordia has been like really great in giving us new material for forensics and making it more accessible for people.
Yeah. And I feel like that's where we get the best coverage, is all of these different levels of education and scientific peer review. I think the DFRWS is more of that scientific peer review level. And Hexordia is more accessible training that doesn't break the bank. Of course, the credentials that you get from SANS is great, and it's non-software specific. We've got a variety of options available for us in terms of education and training as the discipline gets more widespread. I think there's going to be the interest levels there to have all manner of accessibility. And I cover a lot of the thought leadership, so much more surface level type of coverage in terms of forensics trends. But I can't get into a lot of detail just because of my expert testimony work. So it's good to be able to provide all levels of coverage when it comes to this topic, because I think it's really needed.
Absolutely. There's so many different areas of attention that we need as well. Having different levels of experts, different types of experts, all of that is going to be in the contribution of pushing this industry forward. So I'm really excited to see what you have to bring to this as well. I think we both have two different sides of the coin, but we serve the same coin. And I'm really excited to see that expert witness side and the things that you have to share with our group when we go to Lesotho as well.
Yeah, speaking of, you and I are going to pair up and go to Lesotho. And I've been doing a lot of research on it. I've been abroad many more times just because I'm a lot older and further along in my career. Most of the travel has been through work, right, as a consultant. I'm expected to pick up engagements from clients located in a lot of different locations around the globe. It's exciting work. And I think we were paired up specifically because of those different experience levels and perspectives that we have. But you cover like the academic side of things. How close are you to getting your PhD?
By the skin of my teeth. I've been telling people I'm about 99% done. All I have to do is get my publications out. I'm in my very last bit. When you sign up for school, you start with a computer science 101, and now I'm all the way at 999. So I'm in the very last class that you should sign up for. Just get my dissertation out, getting it refined. And as soon as that's done, I just want to continue to share this type of research with the world.
Yeah, and you've had such an amazing groundswell of notoriety, and that's all because of really consistent work on your part, but also promotion on your part. In this day and age with social media, you've got to self-promote to be noticed. And do you think that's part of the reason why you've gotten a lot of the opportunities that you had traveling abroad, namely one of them starting with that Germany trip and now this Lesotho trip?
Yeah, for sure. I remember once my advisor was giving me some accolades for an award I had got at school. And so he said, she doesn't self-promote really, so I'll do it for her. And I saw just the type of reaction and feedback and support that I got. And it just reminded me that you can't do all the work that you do in the dark, in the closet. You do have to share what you're doing. I'm a middle-aged, older millennial myself. And as a security professional, I battle with what I put out online and then what I don't. And so I realized that there is a way to approach this, because once I did get that award from school, it showed me that this work is very important. We're not just basket weaving or counting Swiss cheese holes. Doing digital forensic work is something that is going to advance justice, social justice, criminal justice. And this was important. So I decided to take a moment and recognize the things that I was doing and putting them out for other people so that way they could see what I was doing. And then I never realized that this could lead to a great collaboration. But ever since I've been putting out certain things that I've been doing, people have been reaching out with different opportunities, and the ones that I have a time and availability for, I'll entertain. And so with that all being said, it only took about 60 seconds once you called me to say, I'm in for this trip for sure.
Yeah, you answered that pretty quickly. Now, you and I have not been to Africa, and thinking about Lesotho, what were your initial reactions beyond being excited and collaborating with me? And I had the same level of excitement when you accepted. But what kind of unknown fears, expectations, warnings did you get from family and friends about traveling to Africa? I think we have all some preconceived notions. And I wanted to talk about those things so that we can compare and contrast our experience once we've been there and left, kind of debrief on our experience of how accurate those preconceptions were.
Yeah, for sure. So definitely for some of the first things that crossed my mind was, well, never been this far from home before. And never been this far from home, like by myself, like without anybody else, like in my family. So I wanted to take it on as a brand new adventure and go into it with the idea of I have a chance to make a great impact. That's one of the biggest things that I enjoy about this field is making an impact. And the impact may not be seen with, this is not sales, we're not getting customers, but the impact is seen when you can see a system close up some of those gaps, where you can see that people who may have been like prosecuted for the wrong thing, now they're no longer. And that type of impact across the world was just a huge opportunity of excitement for me. I had an aunt that traveled to Africa to do some work with like the Peace Corps and like some nursing back when I was a kid. So this is something that has always been on my radar, to be able to do something like this and make an impactful move, especially as a volunteer. That is something that I've always wanted to do, just because I saw that representation myself as a child. And so getting to do something like this, travel to Lesotho, a place that I will admit I had never heard of before we talked on the phone, I took a deep dive into what this was, what this could be, and how this could impact. And so after seeing that there's been a lot of things like corruption and things like that going on, political corruption and a lot of financial crimes, this was a chance for me to say whatever myths could be out there about and misconceptions about traveling to a place like this, let's go ahead and just get in front of it. Let's see what this is really about. Let's see if we can get some advice, because I don't want fear to be instilled in me so where I cannot pursue the things that I want to. But yeah, been getting a lot of support from friends, family is supportive too. They're a little nervous, but I've been just reassuring that we're going with, I'm going with a great set of people, not only you, international traveler, the Financial Services Volunteer Corps. This is something that they do. And so to be a part of this is just, it's just too big for me to walk away from because of fear. So yeah, I'm taking this on fully bootstrapped, and whatever I have to do to stay safe, I'm going to do. And I know we'll both do the same. But yeah, I'm so stoked.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I like the way you put that. The mission is bigger and of greater importance than any fear that we have. The fear needs to be addressed, of course, by doing the necessary research and understanding, you know, what the crime rate is and all that. But Lesotho as a country is actually surrounded entirely by South Africa, which is considered a first world economy. And I think that's the initial goal, is to root out some of the perceived and real corruption that's going on in their financial system there, so that it could raise to the level of global, worldwide cooperation. There needs to be some confidence in the institutions there. And that's our role, is to go with the FSVC, and under their sponsorship, we don't have to pay for our own airfare or lodging. Our volunteer work is really just in our subject matter expertise. But for me, who typically charges consulting fees for this type of work, it's all going to be written off as pro bono hours with FTI Consulting. So I have to give them a shout out and really admire the fact that they have a program where we are afforded pro bono hours to do this type of volunteer work, because it does serve the greater good. And so going out there to Lesotho, which is situated in within South Africa, like literally situated within South Africa as a completely landlocked country, understanding that some of that system or safety is afforded by the fact that South Africa is nearby, a neighbor. And really, if you look at any of the TikTok videos or YouTube videos about Lesotho and some of those content creators, it's just, I'm so excited because the people there are just really happy to have visitors, and just the joy that you see on everyone's face is hopefully how we're greeted when we arrive. I fully expect that I will get the same reception there, especially since we're sharing knowledge and trying to upskill their forensic lab in Lesotho. So that's really where we're doing all of our training and education, is with the investigators that sit within that lab.
Yeah, and that's so important, honestly, to be able to have that type of expertise come in. If you're going to build up a lab, it's really important that you have people who have that different levels of expertise, because it's not just building up a lab, it's giving policies, it's giving like case studies, it's giving different experiences that can help them be successful. And a lot of times when I'm explaining how a digital forensics works with my friends, the main thing that I try to reiterate is that, you know, that there is no room for any fallacies. Everything has to be done accurately. It has to be repeated. This is a repeatable process. And this is something that we have to take our time and care and share this experience. And where we're, the challenge that we're facing is not just giving them the tools, but making sure that they understand how important these tools are to stay consistent over time. And to get a place that is having a brand new lab, it's great because now we can bring them straight up to the standards that people are using around the world, and that they don't have to start from just the beginning and then have to redo this later on.
Yeah, they definitely don't need to recreate the wheel or reinvent any of the processes, because they're deep rooted, they're time tested, like you said. And that's where I think that you lend a lot of knowledge and expertise is in the academic side, because I don't have an academic background in digital forensics. And the fact that you're graduating with you're getting your PhD from grad school, and then having all of that academic rigor and being able to reinforce that is going to be great, because I think we inherit a lot from law enforcement, and all of that has been time tested, right? The treatment of evidence, the chain of custody, and the really maintaining the integrity and authenticity of evidence, ultimately for it being submitted in court. And that's where I come into play is being able to take the defensible methodologies that were used to have evidence or poke holes on the other side's lack of rigor when it comes to maintaining that evidence, and then opining on it. And it's almost a performative exercise, right? And it's performative in the sense that you need to clearly articulate these really technical concepts to a judge and jury, right? And so being able to translate that into accessible language, common everyday language that doesn't go over everyone's head, so that they can make the determinations that they need to keep the wheels of justice turning. And so I think once we get into this later and perhaps some future sessions here, we can articulate those differences and where you might, during your career path, transition from the back end work to more of the front end expert work, where you're in court on the stand and getting cross-examined by a party that wants to poke holes in your opinions.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. We don't want to send people out and have them be ill-prepared for what to expect. We have so many different examples and experiences where we can say, here's the way that you should do it, and here's the way that you should absolutely not do it. And being able to share that, and you have a lot of industry expertise. I'm just now starting to gain that myself, this being my, I think, fourth year in practicing forensics actively, like full time and everything. We have so many different experiences that we can converge together that can really all right, we're presenting the best of the best. And here's how we got to this as far as understanding it. But also, well, once we leave, I realized after we've been chatting for some time that we collectively make up the entire Big Four.
Oh, do we? Yeah, because you were at Deloitte, right?
Yeah. Yep. So you had three out of the four. So what are your three?
Mine are KPMG initially, and then I went to Ernst & Young, and then I was at PricewaterhouseCoopers.
Okay. Yep. And I make up the fourth being at Deloitte. So we know this is not our first rodeo, right? Setting somebody up.
That's right.
Has never had this type of work or doesn't really know exactly like where to start. Bring in some experts. We set them up. And then what? We leave them with that roadmap to success afterward. We set you up in 2023. In 2033, we don't want you all to be stuck in 2023. It's important that we are, giving them everything that they need. This is the way that we go about making these decisions. Here's how we stay abreast of different technologies, different securities. There's a lot of things to consider when setting up this lab. And like I said, and to continue that path for success. So I definitely think that we are two very custom fit individuals for this type of mission. And I'm really excited to see how this is received and to see like where the team's knowledge is. So that way we can bridge that gap. That's my favorite piece to this is bridging that gap as far as education.
Yeah. And you and I will come up with the curriculum, but I imagine that we will adapt live while we're there, just judging by their level of knowledge. I don't know if we'll get much of a sense of that before we arrive. Luckily, there's been a previous visit where they did set up the lab, and now we're coming in with the established infrastructure. We obviously need to learn what kind of forensic toolkit they have available to them, what kind of hardware and software they have available in that lab, and train to those capabilities, and then leave with some recommendations around how those things can be improved from a hardware and software setup. Policies and procedures, but how to anticipate some future financial schemes, fraud schemes that might be relevant to what they're experiencing and how they curtail that, detect and curtail that in the future, given the tools that they have or some additional tools that they need to procure. And then hopefully there's going to be a third visit, a fourth visit, a fifth visit. I'm not sure it's going to be me and you necessarily on future visits because I think the FSVC wants to give opportunities for a lot of experts to go and help that particular entity along its path. But maybe if we do a good enough job, Dom, they'll send us to other places in the world where we might be needed.
Oh, man, I would love that. That would definitely be a treat. I definitely see how just we have a really privileged situation here in the States and in other very well-off places who have this thing down packed. For the most part. And it made me think to myself there, if a place like Lesotho needs this level of help, there's probably a ton of places that need this level of help as well. And yeah, that's always the goal, especially as consulting along myself to do that great job. So you get that call back in some way and you can continue to spread that impact that you originally set out for. And yeah, that's what I'm really looking forward to most is being able to do something like that for sure.
Yeah, and I really worry about the gap that grows between quote-unquote first world countries and quote-unquote third world countries. Technology moves so fast, and if we don't pay attention to the rest of the world, they could be left behind. And there needs to be constant attention paid to sharing what we learn to the rest of the world so that they can upskill. And for those individuals who want to pursue a digital forensics incident response deeper career path, they should be afforded with those opportunities too. We should, like you said, acknowledge our privilege and pay attention to others because I think the larger the gap grows, the more problems we'll have in the long run, right? Because we don't want any safe havens for corruption and criminal activity. And that's where I think that type of thing would thrive if we don't have people who are on the good side of things, right? The people that are there to prevent that criminal and corrupt activity, then it'll be allowed to fester. And it's just going to make the gap between those worlds much greater. And so we just need to keep bringing all countries and all individuals living in those countries up to speed so that they can thrive, right? And enjoy all the benefits from this fast moving technology and this the related economy.
Yeah, for sure. That's the biggest piece. Of course, I've done a little bit of background knowledge. That mean, literally the day you called, it this whole trip has just been consumed in my head. So I've just been just really excited to dig in. And one thing that I saw, I watched like a YouTube documentary, and there was a guy traveling around Lesotho doing road trips and taking pictures and drone videos and stuff. And so he met with some people out in a village. So this is off the main area that we're going to, which is definitely, I think it's pronounced Maseru, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I was pronouncing it Maseru, but we'll find out the correct pronunciation when we're there. But that's the capital, you're right. And that's that borders, literally is on the border of Lesotho and South Africa. So it's funny to call it a border because it is a loop, right? It's literally a circular loop around the entire country to access in South Africa in any direction, which is crazy to think.
Yeah,
yeah, Maseru sits on the northwest border of Lesotho, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, and it looks pretty developed as far as because it is the capital city, but it seems once you leave out of that area, you really get into the mountainous village. And so the guy who was traveling, he was in the main area and started going to the more remote areas in the mountains. And so running into people, you know, they lived in places with no electricity. They had to walk over three or four villages to go charge their phones. So they did have cell phones. You could just see what the landscape is like, what the economy is like. And this is a place, for instance, like in the United States, if I'm doing digital forensics, I'm likely going to run across an Android or an iPhone. Whereas over there, it may be likely that you come across a feature phone, or AKA flip phone. Or some people call them dumb phones because this is before they had the smart processing chips in them. But their landscape can be very different. So just seeing that how, you know, what it's like over there, just from a simple YouTube video, it really put my mind in a different place to say, when we create the curriculum and when we address things that are specific to Lesotho at this time, we have to consider what their economy is like, what their devices and what their communications and all of those things are. So yeah, that was a very eye-opening. And that was just a little 50-minute thing on YouTube. It's definitely so much more that we have to dive into to make sure that we're tailoring this curriculum to their needs and to their economic situation at the time.
You know what? You just made me think of something, and maybe we can feed back our experience to the software vendors, because they do remove support for old devices, which would be a shame, right? For the countries and their forensic evidence landscape and how those are still alive and well because they're X number of years behind the evolution of devices and data sources that we're dealing with on a constant everyday basis. But just because first world economies are dealing with those things on a current basis doesn't mean that other third world economies are moving at the same pace. I wonder if we look at the different device and app support that's available from these certain vendors and see if it what the mismatch is with the more common devices that we see once we arrive. But I suspect that it's not just the software vendors too. It's also the Apples and the Googles who will remove support, like update support. Like you can't, if you have an older model and if you don't upgrade at least to an OS level that's more current, they'll remove support for it anyway. So you don't get the updates, the software updates, and maybe you have a phone that's stuck in time. And maybe that's what we end up finding out, that they don't trade in and upgrade because they don't have the means to do that.
And that could change everything as far as how the people of the country operate, people of that area operate, and what they have available to them. I would have probably wrongfully assumed that, at least in the video, as he was traveling through all these remote villages, the people, they didn't really have much else, including electricity, but they still had phones. And they were playing music and things like that from their phones. So they had to be some level of smartphone on them that they had. It would definitely be very important to see like how this plays out across the world. Like you said, not just in first world economies, because that's all we're focused on over here. We're focused on how can we get the forensic software to be able to handle the latest devices and the latest softwares and the latest security features. How could our tools essentially breach those securities so that way we can access the data. But we're not really thinking about phones from 12 years ago and how to get support for those. That's just not on our radar right now. So this entire trip and the way that we're preparing for it has just reminded me that forensics, it's not just like one linear path. I may have to dig back into some of the understanding that I had when I first started studying forensics, maybe 10 years ago. That's when I started getting into forensics. So maybe some of those things that we first started learning then, those things may apply to what we're doing now, just depending on what the technological landscape is. And this is just reminding me to maybe continue to do some more research. Maybe if we can find what the actual distribution of phone types are, because as we go to different regional areas, they're going to have different distributions, different phone types. When you go to China, there's a whole different market of phones that are available that you can't even get here, for instance. Yeah, this is going to really put us on our toes for sure. But we have all of the tools that we need as far as from our experience to really be able to serve this country with everything that they need to fight their financial fraud and corruption and all of those things that they're experiencing. So this, every time I talk about it, it just reminds me of the level of impact that we're bringing.
Yeah, and you're really reminding me about why we need a team of forensic people, because there's no way one person has the full breadth of experience that's required to account for all of those variety of things that we need to consider or things that we might encounter, right? I talk a lot about emerging data. I talk a lot about cloud data sources where hard disk forensics is no longer relevant, right? Because we can't march into Microsoft or Google or Amazon's data center as third parties and image their hard drives in their servers. That's just not an option. So we're limited to whatever metadata they allow us to export by way of logs or by way of actual user-generated data. I talk a lot about AI and deepfakes. But while I'm moving on to the latest and greatest with emerging data sources, there's still plenty of work to be done in the traditional way. So, you know, that's why I think you have a lot of law enforcement folks who have that background training, a lot of academic folks who are also steeped in that traditional training. And then once you get into consulting and what we're encountering just on a day-to-day basis in the Fortune 500, AmLaw 200 companies and law firms, you need to really consider all of it. And that's why just us two as a team is important, but even a larger team is also important. So I can imagine if you're an independent forensic examiner, there's going to be frequent need to team up with other independents who have certain specialties. And so I think this type of experience allows you to get specialization in areas that are going to be in demand in the future, whether you join a big firm or go independent on your own. I think it gives you a lot of options and create some value.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It is important to have that type of team. The way that I talk about what digital forensics is and how we serve as forensic practitioners, we are that handshake that everybody needs. If it's a corporate environment, it's the internal affairs group, the ethics group, the maybe some type of like law enforcement legal side. All of them need our help to solve the issue that they're facing with those departments respectively. If it's not in a corporate environment, then we are the handshake to law enforcement. We're a big player when it comes to what we do, especially because even down to incident response, at the tail end of that, there's a forensic practitioner who's coming in to say, yes, this did happen, or no, this did not happen, as far as this investigation or this event or whatever allegation was brought forth. We serve a big part. No one can do it by themselves. I've definitely tried to even be that person by myself in some past roles, or we only had a very small team, and that ended up being to our detriment because there was a lot of need. Right. When you start to bring in all those different folks, you got law enforcement, hey, we need this on one line, and then you got legal, hey, we need this on one line, and this is e-discovery related. And then you got the ethics team, you know, that they need something as well as far as digital forensics. Our contribution to investigations and to incident handling is a major part right now. And we just have to make sure that we are fully equipped with the perspectives and with the manpower in order to handle those type of scenarios. Yeah, that's important for us to bring those types of lessons learned to this experience as well.
Public and private sector opportunities and across the world, really. And I think that's going to be the example that we offer here with our Lesotho trip. I want to use the last couple of minutes to talk really about Lesotho on a personal level between me and you.
So I'm definitely up for checking out the area of Lesotho just to see. This is a massive landscape. And some of the research that I found, they said that Ryan Coogler got his inspiration for what the look of Black Panther was and what the look of Wakanda was, I should say. And so when you think of those mountainous views, those beautiful waterfalls, those are definitely things that I would love to see. I did see some research, or during my research, I found that some of those areas were extremely hard to get to because of the lack of infrastructure as far as like roads and pavement. And once you get out of the city, when you're getting into things that are very mountainous, they may require like a horse or a mule or donkey to access safely. I would be interested to see what some of the people around the area say. What's the best way to access these? They still have some of the original cave markings from the people who lived in those areas. Of course, who wouldn't want to see that? You were going all this way. Yeah, I would love to see that. However we could do that safely as far as accessing it, I would be more than down, because this is a trip that's bigger than just work, right? This is a once-in-a-lifetime trip to go to a very cool place. So I would love to check it out. And any park, any hikes, I'm up for all of that outdoorsy activities. I just know we have to train a little bit so that way we're not too winded. Being so high up in the air, I'm almost below sea level. I live in Virginia, so we're like one of the lowest points on the East Coast. So it's going to be very different going 3,000 plus feet up in the air with their altitude. So being able to see this in person is going to be more than just teaching in a classroom. I think we should definitely get out. I'm a person who loves to culture exchange. My family is Panamanian. And so I would love to just get some culture exchange while we're there and see what types of culture that they can offer us to exchange. I love just trying to communicate with people, even if we don't speak the same language. I always find a way to do. I'm most looking forward to that. Really enjoyed this. And we'll have more, I'm sure, coming up in the future. Thanks, Jerry. See ya. Take care.